I think what management of most companies want is magic. As in, they say they want something to happen, and bing, magically, it happens.
That's Doug Hall talking about the Driving Eureka feature story. What's next after the Innovation Magic Show? The Driving Eureka feature story is brought to you by the Eureka Ranch. The ranch specializes in helping companies find, filter, and fast-track big ideas. To learn more about our new Eureka Hackathon methodology, the fastest way on earth to create and problem-solve business challenges, visit EurekaRanch.com. Let's go! This is episode 32, and I'm Trip Babbitt. All right, Doug. So this week, what's next after the Innovation Magic Show? What's the magic show?
So I had an opportunity. I was just down in Houston, and I met with a guy who was very wise. Okay, so we were in a bar, okay?
Everybody gets wise after a couple of drinks, Doug.
Yeah, a friend of a friend connected me to him, and we just got together and had a little whiskey, and we were talking, and one of the things he said to me was, he said, I think what management of most companies want is magic. As in, they say they want something to happen, and bing, magically, it happens. Now, forget about the fact that a whole lot of people may have had to go pull all-nighters and had to do all kinds of workarounds and all kinds of craziness, but senior executives love magic. And it got me to thinking that when it comes to innovation, people really think of it as magic, as in, you know, the magician comes and bing, look, there's this magical new idea that happens. And, you know, as you know, Trip, I've spent a lot of time over the years doing magic. In fact, almost 50 years ago, I performed as Merwin the Magician and did magic shows. Started out with, you know, working with I used to do kids' birthday parties. I turned pro for the same price that Springsteen turned pro. I just learned this the other day. He turned pro and I turned pro for the same price. I got $5, just like he did. And I thought, I was rich, baby. I was rich. And I went on to do county fairs and festivals and summer theaters and all kinds of stuff, and it helped pay for college, which was wonderful. But in many ways, what I have done over the last too many years is the same thing, which clients would come and they had a big problem and they needed a big idea. And I would basically, to them, it would look like it was magical that I would do that. Now, some of the methods that we use, of course, are, you know, it's that front end of innovation, which is that engagement of listening to consumers, qualitative discovery, thinking of designs, you know, fast and rough prototypes, you know, stuff that pretty common at the front end. And nowadays that's oftentimes done as lean startup and design thinking and all that kind of stuff. And that's all fine. But what I have learned over the years is that that magic at the front, that magic show, if you would, this, you know, experience that you go through, that's not the key to making big ideas happen. The key is what happens after the Innovation Magic Show. You know, after that feel good, cool experience, brainstorming, you know, ethnography, whatever the heck you want to call it, but that front end that gets done. Then you have to do like real work. You have to make it. And so that's why about 10 years ago, I started to build this innovation engineering system. And this is a new field of academic study and innovation leader management, which is built around, you know, bringing in some more substance to the front end, and most importantly, giving a method of operating through development to the market. Okay. And this is not, you know, this is not magic. This is real work. Okay. But there are some tools that can help you. I mean, what you do is you use your qualitative, that's nice, qualitative research, kind of how people are feeling. But then we use data. Quantitative data, so to make real decisions on it. We also do quantitative sales forecasting, 5-year risk-adjusted forecasting. And you say, well, why should I do that? Well, because you're going to have to take a lot of time and energy to make your thing. Don't you want to at least know what the prize is worth at the other end? Yeah. You know, it's a pretty good motivator. Strategic alignment for innovations. Because, see, you know, with innovation, you need to have freedom but focus. You know, you need this sort of this, because you don't really know the it. It's not like you can say strategically do this. No, you got to have a little bit of flexibility. So we built a system for doing that, a system for doing project management, and it goes on and on. So whether it's patents, customer persuasion systems, employee education, there's all kinds of different things to do. And the net result of all of this is by taking innovation engineering after the magic show that creates the idea, we end up with ideas to market up to 5 times faster and with up to 80% less risk. So it's, you know, when we talk innovation, we talk big idea hunt, that it's just the idea. That's not what that's fine. It's good. It's fun. But now we have to get to the real work. And that's where we have to bring in the data. We have to bring in the discipline. All the stuff we've talked about on the podcast, and we talk in particular about, when we talk about the Brain Brew segment on whiskey, that's the grind. And when I say grind, you can look at that as a negative, or you can go, that's where we're getting real stuff done. You know, we are tired, but it's a good tired because you're figuring stuff out. You're making stuff go.
So, Doug, when we've talked about this in kind of different perspectives before, and I don't know whether it's something I'm missing or in general, but I think you're trying to drive this point home, because the other, I don't know how to say it, the other innovation methods lack this rigor, or companies in general lack this rigor. Is that kind of the impetus behind putting this together?
Well, I don't think they even understand it. They don't understand it. I mean, and the other methods are fine. I mean, they're fine for what they do. That's fine. But the challenge is, that's not where the problem is. And unless you've done this, unless you've taken a dozen ideas from idea all the way through the process, you can't even understand what I'm talking about. People think when you put it into development, magically it comes out the other end. The reality is that's not what happens. Okay. And unless you've got some discipline in it, unless you've got alignment, unless you've got really good math as you go through this thing, then you run into all the problems. And the net result is a 95% failure rate, especially from large companies. I mean, this is crazy. And so I want to put a spotlight that after the innovation magic show, where we get this glorious idea and everybody celebrates, they got this cool idea, now the real work begins. And that's the place where you have to invest the time, energy, and money. That's the place that's the most important part. That's where management's needed. That's where everybody needs to be thinking and engaged, and we need to problem solve to make this idea become real.
One last question on this. I've got to ask this, and that is, as you go into organizations, and again, we've talked about some of the previous episodes, but you're seeing that they're lacking this full end-to-end system. Are there specific things that they just aren't going to have that you have that you can mention? In other words, whether it's the forecasting or some type of, you know, and again, use the word magic, but magic in the quantitative research because of some of the things you have. What's the differentiator here?
Yeah. The key is you got to be able to do the research fast and cheap, quantitative research on the product or the service. I mean, because the longer it takes to do that, the less bold you're going to be, because you're going to play it safe. So you need to be able to do it. And in our case, we cut the cost by about 94%, 95%. We cut the cost, time and cost, because of some of the digital tools. But it's also a mindset that has to be educated into the people. Okay. And sadly, we take our engineers, we take our finance people, we take our procurement people, and we don't think their job is necessarily to be creative. We have those marketing people do that creative stuff. But the fact is to make the idea real, we're going to need innovation and creative thinking by all of those people, all the way to market. And that's the part that we just don't, it doesn't sound flashy. let's teach engineers, accountants, and purchasing agents and lawyers and regulatory people how to think innovatively. You know, that's not hip, you know, but that's the key. That's the people that make, you know, the thing go. This is the engine room. These are the people that make the boat go. I mean, you need to have that infrastructure, and that's the focus of my life today, is to help teach those people so that they can, you know, have the wonders of figuring out how to problem solve. Because I've got it over and over again. I got people saying, I got this great idea. They have this great idea. I go, how the heck are you going to make that? Mm-hmm. They go, well, that's what R&D's for. And I'm like, yeah, there's R&D. And then there's just plain ridiculous. I mean, you're breaking Newton's laws of physics here, okay? I mean, come on, people. Well, no, you're just not being open. I said, I'm being open, but you have no concept of what's it take, what the chemistry is, or the mechanics, or the electronics, or the software, or what we, you know, you're not connected to reality here.
Okay, very good. The Enabling Innovation segment is provided by the Innovation Engineering Institute. Innovation engineering is a new field of academic study and leadership science. Its mission is to change the world by enabling innovation by everyone, everywhere, every day, resulting in increased speed and decreased risks. To learn more about on-campus, off-campus, live, and online courses, visit innovationengineering.org. Well, we have a new name for our second segment, which is the Enabling Innovation segment. And this is where you do the big reveal of three of your innovation magician secrets. And I still got a picture in my head when you were talking in the first segment, Doug, about you being in a clown suit doing magic or something and scaring young children. So I still got that in my head. So hopefully you can move me away from that.
Yeah, well, you should, because see, I was Merwin the Magician. I had the cape and the top hat. My brother was Boo Boo the Clown. He was the one in the clown face.
Okay. Of course, it was the brother. Okay.
Yeah, Merwin and Boo Boo. Okay. So for over 40 years, I've been doing this innovation magic. And they think, you know, people think I'm a genius because I do it. The reality is, this is not. I've actually learned, I was taught, and I've discovered some secrets. So this is the magician's reveal of the secrets. Okay. Because the week after next, I'm doing a Eureka Inventing session, an accelerator session, with a Fortune 500 corporation that has a real high urgency. They got to get some ideas for this problem that they've got. They really need, and they want big ideas, big, big ideas. And in preparation for the session, there's a lot of talk about, you know, the SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, you know, all that kind of stuff, and about the competitive offerings and their customers and all of this stuff. And I'm basically staying out of all of those conversations. I'm just staying out of it. My preparation is in three areas, and I'm going to tell you that if you really need a big, big idea, these are the three things that I do to prepare. Okay?
Okay.
So, number one, I'm going to do what we call wisdom mining, or I'm going to look in academic journals. I'm going to look in these journals for insights into human behavior related to the client's challenges, because they give me – see, the journals are peer-reviewed, so they give me insight with some validation. And they take me out of the here and now, and they get me to think at a higher level. What is the human dynamics that are going on? A lot of great psychology journals where they've done research studies with people to see about switching from one brand to another, or one product to another, or changing behaviors, some really good stuff. And that opens up my mind to looking at this from a much bigger thing, because otherwise everybody gets in the weeds. You know, they get into the weeds. So I'm going to use academic journals, and from these, I'll get myself probably a half dozen. It'll inspire about a half dozen ideas, and I'll be like, remember Cliff Clavin on Cheers?
Oh, sure.
You know how he could explain everything. You know, at one point I'll say an idea, and I say, and you know, there was a study that was done at the University of California that's found blah 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 blah. You know, and they'll nod and go, oh, so wise, so wise. Now forget all of that crap, because that doesn't matter. What matters is I will take them to a new place by looking at it, by using this academic journals as my inspiration. Okay. So that's the first thing I'm going to do. Second thing I'm going to do is free and what we call flea market patents. Now, there's millions of patents that are in the public domain because they've gone out, and there's about 250,000 a year that we call flea market patents that you can buy oftentimes very cheap because they haven't paid their maintenance fees and they've pretty much given up on them. And I really like patents as inspiration for something because they're basically blueprints of how to do amazing things. Because, you know, when the patent was granted, it was non-obvious to people with ordinary skill. It was a true breakthrough. And I'm going to combine past patents into a new and amazing inventions that can be patented. So even though they're free, I can take those parts, I can put them together in different ways, add some other stuff to it, and ding, have something cool. And these give me a real leverage point because I'm going after real experts' thoughts associated with this stuff. And they're just incredibly powerful. And I'll have it again. I'll have another half dozen ideas that will be very disruptive, oftentimes from patents in different categories than what the client's looking at, where I will bring. So like our whiskey, we took paper making, heat and pressure to remove the lignins to make paper, applied it to whiskey, where heat is used to take the alcohol into the wood, and then it comes out with the lignins, creating the flavor. And I took pulp and paper and applied it to whiskey making. And you know, got amazing whiskey. And so that borrowing brilliance from other categories can be quite powerful. And then the third one is TRIZ. And this came out of Russia, and it's a technique of structured problem solving that was based on patents. This guy, Ricky, over in, that's what we nicknamed him, over in Russia, studied all of the patents, the output of invention, and he found patterns that the same problem was solved in different categories. They solved the same problem. And he put together this incredible system, which can be very complex with books and you have to go through pages, and the teams put together a cool automated version of this. But you can do this. You can look it up and you can find it. Mm-hmm. And it is an amazing thinking system. In many ways, it's analogies. You're using like a turbocharged analogy machine, and it always works. It disrupts the thinking of your brain and gets you to fresh places. And as you probably guessed, these three methods, whether it's academic journals, patents, or TRIZ, are all built into our courses for innovation engineering, both on and off campus. And they're built into the software platform to automate them, but you can do them by yourself. I mean, you can look them up. And so there it is. Yeah. When I invent ideas, it's not magic, but there's some methods that allow me to shake my brain up and get it thinking from different directions.
You know, when I went through the classes at the ranch, some of these things I was familiar with, but I found it very helpful to kind of get some guidance on what to look for in academic journals from the class. I had never read a patent up until the time that I took the class, so I had no idea what I was looking at. And unless you're an engineer or somebody, I mean, you can suffer and sort through it if you want, but I found it very helpful in the class from my perspective to get professional guidance in kind of being able to pick the things out.
Yeah. Yes. Coaching helps. Yes. It absolutely helps. It absolutely helps. But blunder forward. Yeah. Just go. Just get started. Is my advice to people. Is to just get out there and get started with some of this stuff, because that's what you need to do to make these things work. Just get out and try things. Just get out and try it. And but looking at things unexpected, all the obvious places everybody else is looking. You know, if you want to find something different, you got to look somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about all of this stuff here is that, you know, whether it's academic literature, I mean, this is an original contribution to the art. Whether it's patents, has to be non-obvious. Whether it's TRIZ, which is an examination of it. I mean, you know, there's a pattern here. This is original thinking that you're looking at. You're looking at the original thoughts of some people. And that's kind of amazing. You know, I'm just blown away. I mean, I'm reading the work of pioneers, you know, that were the first. And if you want a pioneer, it's nice to go back to that original source.
Absolutely. Brain Brew Custom Whiskey is proud to present the Whiskey Academy. It's an informal conversation from the front lines of craft distilling in the USA, UK, and Canada. To learn more about how you can have your own custom whiskey, go to brainbrewwhiskey.com. Well, let's move to our Brain Brew Whiskey Academy. How you make sure your products are really great. We've talked about a number of things before, you know, with regards to, you know, doing taste tests and things of that sort. So what do you got for us here today?
Well, this was inspired by a number of trips recently where I've tasted quite a number of craft spirits, and some of which were amazing and some of which were maybe not as amazing. That's in there, all categories, obviously. And I was thinking about, why is it that ours, you know, tend to do pretty good, you know, maybe better than pretty good, very good. Okay. And I realized that there was a pattern, and we didn't set out to do it this way, but it's what's evolved. And I thought it might be helpful for people if you're making whiskey, but also in other areas, which is, how do you make sure your product's really good? Because, you know, it's not as simple as you try it and you like it or you do a test. I mean, you got to triangulate it in from a number of different areas. So the first thing we do as a general rule is, the three of us that are the whiskey makers who craft them. Joe's the head whiskey maker, and then Philip and I also will craft whiskeys. And the first thing we do is, well, taste it, and somebody in the three of us has to love it. Okay. If we all say it's okay, then we're dead, because okay isn't good enough. But if one person, if Philip says it's awesome and I think it's just not there, I know enough to know that I don't know everything. And if he sees it as something that could be really hot, as long as one person sees it as awesome, then we go forward. If nobody sees it as awesome, and I'll tell you, I've made them myself and had the guys taste them, I go, yeah, it's okay, but yeah, I wouldn't say it's awesome. And, you know, we're done. Start all over again. Okay. You just start all over again. In the event, then the next thing we do is we quantitatively test it with a representative sample of the customers that this product's going to be marketed for. And we see how people react to it. And then we find the truth, because the numbers don't lie. I mean, they tell us like it is. And okay, so say we're okay there. Now, sometimes we have to do that 4 or 5 times, sometimes 10 times, sometimes 20 times. It takes a while sometimes. And then the third thing is we live with it. And this one has been surprisingly, because, you know, you do taste tests and that kind of stuff. That's one thing. But when you live with it, your attitudes change. Your attitudes change. And this is like drinking it in different occasions, in different ways, in cocktails, over ice, neat, with different people. Last night we had a barbecue and had a little fire afterwards, and we're sitting there with some chocolates, and I went down to the whiskey cellar and brought out a number of different bottles, and ours and others, and, you know, we did a little tasting of some of the different ones there, and it's like you just start to see it in different occasions, and it takes on three dimensions to you, and from this we'll get new insights that will inspire changes, or totally new products will happen. And so it's very much an iterative process of creating, testing, pivoting. And while many people do number one, you know, the whiskey makers taste it and their friends, the number that really quantitatively test it, and the people that, you know, do out a sample bottle and have people live with it, are very small. They're very small. And that's why we've got a getting people to live that way, so that you really see it in multiple dimensions, is real important.
Yeah, I, you know, it's interesting to me, and especially now, you know, engaged in this psychotic thing of trying to put this distillery together in Indiana. But, you know, I find myself listening to videos and podcasts and different things on whiskey, and it just seems so overwhelming to me at this point that, you know, it would seem I have such an individual taste that, and you know, you have three people that in your group that have tried all of these things. It just seems like it's so difficult to kind of find the sweet spot of not only what you three would agree to, but what consumers would like you do in the second step. I mean, it just seems very overwhelming to me that you would be able to find something that an entire market would like. And so do you have any insights into that? Any helpful hints as to?
Yeah, you got to do it. I just had a conversation with a guy who's starting a distillery, and he's like, you know, they're all pretty much the same. And I'm like, dude, you don't get it. He's like, by the time you add ice and water, they all taste the same. I said, no, they don't. I said, here, I can make you four cocktails with four of our whiskeys, and you tell me those cocktails taste the same. They don't. But see, but that doesn't do it. You got to get into it. You got to get into it. And there are nuances and there are differences. And now, in some cases, if it's the same mash bill and all a new American oak, it's going to be pretty much the same. If the climate's about the same, there's not a lot of difference. But when you start using different woods like we do, radically different woods, maple, cherry, 200-year, European, Japanese, American, you get totally different dimensions of taste. And then when you start to put those wood finishes together, you're going to get even more unique tastes. I mean, that's where the magic is. And then they all react to cocktails in different ways, is the whole thing. So, you know, this is all very doable, but you got to have to get some experience. I mean, we've run 400, 500, 600 quantitative taste tests. So, you know, I got a lot of data now. But we didn't start that way. We started ignorant and stupid, just like everybody else.
So it's really kind of finding the sweet spot by going and doing this and then getting the experience of knowing kind of what consumers go to. And then, as you've talked about in previous episodes, you talked about then pushing the limits of, you know, finding whole new categories of things too.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just sweet spot. It's sweet spots with an S. And it's not just the customer, it's which customers.
Right.
So do I want millennials? Do I want whiskey lovers? Do I want old baby boomers? You know, and I'm one, so I can say it. You know, do I want women? You know, do I want trendsetters? Do I want foodies to be into this thing? Do I want to be heavily cocktail focused? Or do I want to be, you know, drinking it neat like John Wayne, you know? You know, what do I want to try to make this thing into? And that's something that just takes some time. And you have to put it together.
Interesting. It's,
kind of a giant puzzle, you know, we've got four whiskeys in our Riverboat series and, you know, to be perfectly honest, you know, I haven't found anybody yet who likes all four. I know people that'll like the first two and people that like the second two. And I know some that, you know, will like the third and the first and, you know, but, you know, they're different and they apply to different people.
So you really get into finding, breaking it down, you know, I've heard the saying, riches are in the niches.
And these aren't niches. I mean, women is over half the population and it's, you know, a growing group. So, you know, so they're good sized markets. I mean, the what we're talking about here, but it takes the hard data. You can't do this qualitatively. You have to get quantitative data because you can't see these differences. You know, you can get a lot of false positives and false negatives. So you really have to get, you have to do the data, which is why we do the testing, which is why, I mean, we got somebody coming in next week. He wants to create his own whiskey. And we're going to make a whiskey for him, and he's out west, and we're going to make it for his distillery. And, but we'll take him through, we'll coach him through it. We'll run the testing for him. Because we can do it very quick and easy, you know, again, just like we've oftentimes say coaching matters, you know, it really can help you. Right. That's what we're here to do. You know, that's what Brain Brew's about, is making custom whiskeys. So as we say, because everybody deserves their own whiskey.
That's a great way to end this segment too. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Trip.
Thank you for listening to the Driving Eureka podcast. Go to eurekaranch.com to learn more about how to find, filter, and fast track big ideas. To learn more about Brain Brew custom whiskey, go to brainbrewwhiskey.com.